I'm going to introduce the sermon this morning with a little video clip. Entirely appropriate, I think, a video clip with Viktor Frankl in an interview. I apologize for the quality of the image that's downloaded. I just feel we're blessed to be able to have images of people like Viktor Frankl speaking to us. He died in 1997, I believe. He was an Austrian Jew, a neurologist and psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust, although none of the members of his family did. He went on to found a school of psychology based on the belief that the primary human motivation is the need for meaning in our lives. His most famous book is based on his experience in the Nazi concentration camps, and was titled Man's Search for Meaning. As I said, he died in 1997 at the age of 92.
Frankl, what exactly does a meaningful life entail?
A meaningful life has three main chances to become meaningful, that is. Namely, by doing a deed or creating a work. Second, by experiencing something or someone. Something refers to nature, culture, and someone to another human being whom we are loving. So, life can become meaningful through work and through love. But if need be, if you are confronted with a situation which is unalterable, a situation that has caused you suffering, even then, you may, so to speak, still squeeze out from such a situation a potential meaning to fulfill by the attitude that you are adopting in such a situation. If we define a human being as a being in steady search for meaning, here is the very place where religion comes in. Inasmuch as man, or say a large essential part of the human population, is going one step beyond that, inasmuch as they strive also for something one might call an ultimate meaning. And in religion, man, a religious individual, is not satisfied just with finding a meaningful task to complete. But he goes, or she goes, a step forward by also including the awareness of a task giver, as it were. This is divinity. So there is a new dimension they enter, religious personalities enter, by striving for something they may experience and receive, be perceptive of in terms of an ultimate meaning, not just meaning, but an ultimate meaning.
Okay. So our theme for the month is resilience. And I can think of no better model of resilience, as was said earlier, than the resilience of the Jewish faith across the centuries. That's one reason we read from Ecclesiastes this morning. And at the end of the clip, Viktor Frankl had some interesting things to say about the role of religion and the role of religion in our need for meaning. And I'm going to save my comments on that for the end of the sermon. The sermon this morning is on the topic of post-traumatic growth. We hear a lot about post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and not so much about post-traumatic growth. PTSD is a mental illness. It's triggered by exposure to trauma involving death or threat of death or serious injury or sexual violence. We're most familiar with it as a condition suffered by soldiers. And soldiers who have witnessed or experienced horrific events on the battlefield. We are becoming more aware of the condition as it affects people who have had their lives threatened or have been abused emotionally or sexually in civilian context as well. There are appalling numbers associated with the concept of PTSD. It's been reported that more American Vietnam veterans died from suicide after the Vietnam War was over than were killed during the war itself. The good news here is that research in psychology shows that people in general, are amazingly resilient in the face of trauma. In one study, it's estimated that 50 to 60% of North Americans would experience severe trauma, but only 5 or 10% would develop symptoms of PTSD. PTSD symptoms include repressing thoughts, avoiding people and places, memory lapses related to the traumatic events, loss of interest in once important things, feeling distance from others, being hyper-vigilant, sleep deprivation, lack of concentration, difficulty having positive feelings like love and happiness, irritability and unprovoked anger, drug and alcohol abuse, and suicidal thoughts. The goal in treating the mental illness, labeled as PTSD, is for the patient to bounce back, I suppose, to recover the life and the mental attitudes that they had before. Post-traumatic growth, on the other hand, is the opposite of a mental illness. The identification of post-traumatic growth can be seen as the product of the positive psychology movements. I need to pause here to say that I have no great expertise in psychology, but I love the opportunity that preparing these sermons each week provides for me to delve deeper into all manner of fields. This sermon in particular has opened several doors for me, or maybe dropped me down several rabbit holes, to expose me to ideas that I could not possibly do justice to in the time available in this service. But there's lots of great ideas here for future sermons. One of the ideas I want to explore is this idea of the positive psychology movement. The movement was officially launched in 1998 when the president of the American Psychological Association, Martin Seligman at the time, he chose it as a theme for his term as president. Seligman was convinced that the future of psychology didn't lie in treating mental illness, but rather in nurturing human talent and improving the so-called normal life. The field is founded on a belief that people want to lead meaningful and fulfilling lives. They want to cultivate what is best in themselves and to enhance their experience of love and work and play. This epiphany was based on work going back to Abraham Maslow in the 1950s and Salvatore Amidi in the 1960s, and it's supported by a raft of books of popular psychology. Books like Maxwell Maltz's Psycho-Cybernetics, Born to Win by Muriel James and Dorothy Young, and let's not forget Norman Vincent Peale. These attitudes mesh beautifully with Unitarian Universalist principles, recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of all persons, accepting one another, and encouraging spiritual growth in our congregations. The term post-traumatic growth was coined by psychologists Richard Tedeschi and Lawrence Calhoun at the University of North Carolina in the mid-1990s. They originally set out to study wisdom. They were going to write a book, actually, on wisdom, the sources of wisdom. And they started to interview individuals who were renowned for their wisdom. And they found that most of the people they were interviewing talked about events in their lives that had been traumatic and that had opened a door into a new experience for them. They found that most of them gave credit to some trauma in their lives that had caused them to think deeply and to reassess their view of the world. Tedeschi and Lawrence realized that there had been little or no study on the positive effects of trauma on our lives. And so their research took them in a new direction to explore how trauma could result in psychological growth. What is post-traumatic growth? Tedeschi and Lawrence define it as follows. It is positive change experienced as a result of the struggle with a major life crisis or a traumatic event. Post-traumatic growth is not about bouncing back from the effects of trauma. It's about bouncing forward. It's not about treating mental illness. Rather, it's in the spirit of positive psychology, it's about improving your life by using the introspection and the reflection that comes from recovering from trauma to become a better person than you were before. Now, it's careful here to say that no one is saying that trauma is a good thing in our lives. It's an unavoidable thing in our lives in some cases. It is saying that trauma can have some positive effects on our lives. Studies indicate that the experiences of personal spiritual growth in the aftermath of traumatic events outnumber reports of psychiatric disorders. And it's important to note that the negative aspects of post-traumatic disorder can also coexist with the positive effects of post-traumatic growth. They are not mutually exclusive. Tedeschi and Lawrence report that post-traumatic growth tends to occur in 5 general areas. Sometimes people who must face major life crises develop a sense that new opportunities have emerged from the struggle, opening up possibilities that were not present before. The second area is a change in relationship with others. Some people experience closer relationships with some specific people, and they can also experience an increased sense of the connection to others who suffer. A third area of possible change is an increased sense of one's own strength. If I have lived through that, I can face anything. A fourth aspect is experienced by some people as a greater appreciation for life in general. And a fifth involves the spiritual or religious domain, which I'm saving for the end of this sermon. Can we prepare ourselves for post-traumatic growth? What factors might predict growth following a trauma? It'll come as no surprise, probably, that the factors generally associated with good mental health will correlate with an experience of post-traumatic growth. Social support has been well documented as a buffer to mental illness and distress response. A history of maintaining close support of friends and family is one of the best predictors of a good outcome. The ability to accept situations that cannot be changed is crucial for adapting to traumatic life events. Coming to terms with reality, as it were, is a significant predictor of post-traumatic growth. Early success in coping could be a precursor to post-traumatic growth. A person's level of confidence also plays a role in his or her ability to persist into growth or, out of lack of confidence, to give up. I recognized as I'm writing this that I've lived a very blessed life. I've not had a life experience as an adult that I can describe as traumatic. As a child, however, I was raised in an alcoholic family, and I recognize now that has traumatized me, and I recognize how that affects my behavior today. The effect of physical and psychological trauma on children is at the root of many of our health problems today. And that I'm going to save for another sermon. I realize that others here today have suffered trauma as adults and as children, some of you multiple times. In my life before and since ministry, I've been with many people who suffered in this way. I want to honor your experience. I hope that my discussion of events doesn't trigger an adverse reaction in you. This is a sanctuary, after all, where we should all feel safe. In a film about post-traumatic growth called Resolve, the experience of 9 individuals who suffered major trauma and then experienced post-traumatic growth is documented. Trauma ranged from the death of an infant child to financial ruin to being trapped and severely burned in a car wreck to trauma from war and to cases of severe spinal cord injury. The survivors collectively list the following steps that they took after trauma that resulted in their growth. And no one suggested this was an easy process. No one suggested that they went through this linearly one step at a time and didn't struggle. But here's the steps that they felt were important. First, to take the time to pause and to acknowledge what had happened. Take the time to honor yourself and your suffering, and to take the time to accept and realize there are things you cannot change. Second, acknowledge your feelings and write them down. This quote is from Maya Angelou, and it's on the cover of today's Order of Service. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of you. Third, engage your physical body in play and exercise. Fourth, imagine a better future. Nurture hopes and dreams. It's a tenet of positive psychology that we're pulled forward by our visions of the future more than we are driven by the events of our past. Fifth, connect with things that feed your spirit, in particular the natural world. Sixth, laugh a lot. Cultivate and exercise your sense of humor. Seventh, ask for help, support from family, from friends, and from health professionals. And finally, give of yourself. The best way to overcome an unhealthy focus on yourself is to serve others. They also gave advice to those trying to help the person who has had the traumatic experience. Tedeschi and Lawrence call these individuals expert companions. And by this, they don't mean formally trained individuals, but people who have the following capabilities. People who can realize that their role is to listen. People who realize that they have much to learn and are willing to learn. And people who can avoid offering fixes and simple platitudes. This is the hardest part of being with someone, to listen to the suffering and the trauma and not want to jump in and fix it. And give people a quick solution. As I reach the end of the sermon now, I want to return to that video clip by Viktor Frankl. His groundbreaking work on the need for meaning in our lives is being borne out in what we're learning about the opportunities for growth in even the most traumatic situations. Trauma can shake our entire worldview, our faith system. And we all have faith systems. It can cause us to question the very value of our lives, as the statistics around PTSD and suicide substantiate. The antidote is to have meaning in our lives. In the video clip, Frankl talks about the role of religion in the process of giving meaning in our lives. He acknowledges that we can have meaning in our lives based on 2 things: what we do with our lives and what we experience with our lives. What we experience particularly through our emotional connection. He concludes that we can have meaning in our lives through our work or through our love, or ideally through both of these things. the underlying fear that generates the symptoms of post-traumatic stress syndrome is the fear that this life, this universe, is ultimately totally capricious and without meaning. And for someone who has seen firsthand the horrors of war or death due to famine, disease, or earthquake or tsunami, this worldview can make some sense. And yet we know that having meaning in our lives is essential to our mental health. For this reason, I reject the notion of a search for meaning in our lives. See, no matter what you find as meaningful in your life, ultimately it can be shattered and swept away by the effects of trauma. In place of searching for meaning, I would substitute the idea of giving meaning. We each must make a conscious decision about what our lives will mean. And so Frankl tells us that we can give our lives meaning through our work, through our tasks, if we choose to do so, and through our relationships with other people, with other things, and with the natural world. What I found fascinating was his description of the role of religion in giving meaning to our lives. For the atheists, the tasks that are chosen to give meaning to our lives are up to us to choose. For the theist, Frankl uses the delightful term, the task giver, and calls the task giver divinity. For the theist, there is an ultimate meaning, defined by something bigger than humanity. In the Jewish tradition, God is sometimes referred to as the one who gives purpose to the otherwise purposeless. How does post-traumatic growth relate to spiritual growth? Some who have suffered severe trauma experience a deepening of their spiritual lives. However, this deepening can also involve a significant change in one's belief system. In his landmark book, Stages of Faith, James Fowler concludes that a major life-changing event, like the traumas that we've been describing, can be triggers that make someone's present level of faith untenable and forces them into a bigger vision of their faith, a higher stage of faith. Well, having meaning in our lives is the essence of any faith system. And strengthening that sense of meaning is the key to continued spiritual growth, even in the face of devastating trauma. I wish all of you that sense of meaning for your lives. May it be so. Amen.